Thank you for the introduction. In fact, living next to the second largest Chinese community in Italy, I have the chance to practice in this activity.
Well, you did very well over lunch today.
Okay, so okay, thank you. So now I can come back and feel happy. Okay, so CNR is more or less dead, I agree, but I am in a branch which was not even born. So this is very, very nice. So, first of all, I'm pleased to be here. I'm very happy to contribute. And while deciding which way to contribute, I thought that it would have been very appropriate to present some work that started long ago in the early 90s, exactly in collaboration with Raymond, Gianluca Loppo, who is here, and Roberto Livi. And after some excitement in the 90s, when I was thinking that it could have been a very interesting type of general phenomenon, then my interest was slowly decaying, because I thought at some point that it was just a mathematical curiosity. But more recently, I came across with a couple of models where this type of behavior that I'm going to illustrate and to present in the next slides is instead perhaps more interesting than what I was starting not to believe in the last years. Okay, so I forget about the outline and go directly to the first context where this phenomenon was observed. So we were studying, in the early 90s, this is the reference, coupled maps in a diffusive way, where so the single map, the single unit, the dynamics is described by this red curve. And there is a discontinuity. The single map has a period three solution. The orbit jumps among these three points. And if you couple them in according to this rule, what we found was a behavior like this one. Okay, so I'm sorry for the color, which is not very nice. Anyway, this is a space, time is flowing downwards, and for different values of the coupling strength, you see, using some coding which is of this type, basically you code depending whether you are to the left or to the right of this discontinuity. So you find some patterns that are very much reminiscent of cellular automata pattern, but what is most important is that they look irregular. And if you try to compute the Lyapunov exponent during the evolution, you find that the Lyapunov exponent is negative. So there is something that seems really absurd, because you try, for instance, to measure, like it is shown here, spatial correlations or temporal correlations, and in both cases you do see some exponential decay of the correlations. So everything points in towards the direction of a very irregular dynamics, but everything is also stable in the sense of the Lyapunov exponent. Now the paradox is resolved if you realize that after all this is nothing but a transient, and this is summarized in this picture, because this is the length of the lattice, so the number of points that of maps that I'm considering, and for n finite, if I try to measure how long does this irregular regime last before falling onto some periodic orbit, then you see that there is a finite time, but the finite time grows exponentially. Please notice that this is a logarithmic scale, grows exponentially with n. So if you are working with n already, let's say around 100, there is no chance of observing the end of the transient, and you should, in practice, consider this regime as a sort of stationary regime. Actually, this idea is reinforced by the fact that if you try to measure any observable you are interested in at different times during the transient, you do see that there is no dependence on time. So this regime is not, in some sense, a transient if the system size is large enough. So this is the type of behavior that we found in this setup. And in the attempt of somehow characterizing in a more general context the property of this behavior, we also looked at the propagation of perturbations. In fact, it's obvious that if you are dealing with space-time chaos, the Lyapunov exponent is positive, and infinitesimal perturbation not only grows but spreads. And In this case, I mean, Lyapunov exponent is negative, but you can try to look at the evolution of finite amplitude perturbation. And in fact, what you see, these are four pictures which refer to four different parameter values, and the most chaotic one, chaotic in quotes, is this one. So you see that a single perturbation, which is localized here, propagates. And you can try to measure the degree of chaoticity by quantify the degree of chaoticity just looking at the velocity of propagation. And you can perhaps compare in systems which are instead chaotic. If a system is chaotic and you do the following type of experiment, you introduce an infinitesimal perturbation here and you let it evolve and you measure how the amplitude grows along different world lines, you get the curve like this typically. And if the velocity is too large, you don't see anything, and there is a limiting velocity along which the propagation is neither exponentially growing nor exponentially going down, and this is we call it the linear velocity of propagation of perturbations. And there are systems, I mean, if you take any normal system you can imagine, Ginzburg-Landau or whatever, Fermi-Pasta-Ulam chain of oscillators, normally you do see that the propagation of infinitesimal perturbation is the same as the propagation of finite amplitude perturbations. If coming back to our model that was this series of maps here, and changing a little bit the shape of the map in such a way that we are removing the discontinuity and replacing this vertical curve with a slightly tilted one, we could see we could measure at some point after some critical value some linear velocity because the Lyapunov exponent was starting to be positive. And in this there is an entire region where the nonlinear velocity, meaning the velocity of finite amplitude perturbation, is larger than the linear velocity. So this is the one way of characterizing this type of regime, a regime where finite perturbations do propagate faster than infinitesimal one. Okay, so this is more or less the state of the art in the mid-90s, and I was looking for models where this type of phenomenology can be seen, because, I mean, a chain of coupled maps with that shape doesn't sound very physical. It was introduced just to understand what happens in a specific case, but then you are interested in verifying whether there is some sort, say, of universality behind this scenario. And we bumped into this model that is very different, and you can somehow forget about this initial part, and let's go directly here. I mean, it is a model that is normally used in the context of neural networks. It's called leaky integrated fire neurons. The variable X is to be interpreted as the membrane potential of a single neuron. Forget for a moment about this complicated term here. The evolution of the single neuron is a sort of relaxation process until the potential reaches a threshold, then a spike is emitted and sent to all the other neurons, and the potential is reset to initial value, and this way the dynamics goes on. This is the coupling term. Okay, it's complicated, but practically it's easy. I mean, you just express in this way that the single pulses emitted by the single neurons are received by all the other neurons, and possibly with different coupling strengths. And okay, this model was studied by several people, and we started just to familiarize with the model, considering a system with the same coupling, so all neurons equal to one another, each neuron coupled to all the others, and spikes, exactly delta-like spikes, and in this case we could even find an exact expression for the Lyapunov exponents that turns out to be negative. So far nothing very exciting, I should say. Then we started introducing some small disorder in the sense that we are cutting some of the connections, sort of dilution, the way we are calling it, and first of all, this is the fraction of links that were randomly cut in the network, and we were first of all verifying that the Lyapunov exponent was remaining negative. This is these are negative numbers, okay? On the one side it was negative, and then we were trying to see what is the dynamics, how does the dynamics look like, and now if the coupling strength is small enough, what happens is that all the neurons somehow organize in a very simple way, in such a manner that one is firing after the other. This is typically called the so-called raster plot. Then you see that the phases, I mean, one neuron is firing, then the next, then the next, then the next, and then all the neurons start again firing. Now, if you increase a little bit, or not a little bit, actually, the coupling strength, then you enter a regime where after some initial ordering, the initial ordering is lost, and although there are a lot of regularities, you also see that there is a weak form of disorder because the shape keeps changing. And this is better summarized here, because you try to introduce a phase by comparing the position of the potential value of each neuron with those of the neighboring one. Neighboring one meaning those which have approximately at the same time the same potential. And you do see that if the coupling strength is one, I mean, so one is in these adimensional units, you see that after some transient where the phase variation fluctuates, then everything converges to a constant, meaning that the ordering is eventually constant and the position of the mutual position of the neuron don't change any longer. But if you consider this larger value of the coupling, you see that fluctuation keep going on, and once again, like in the very first model that I was presenting you, you see that if you wait long enough, you eventually, since the Lyapunov exponent is negative, converge to a periodic orbit. But if you are in this regime here, g equal to 1 or even less, the time to converge to the periodic orbit is at least growing no faster than a power law. Otherwise, it grows exponentially. And so we are really before two different types of regimes. In the second regime, if you compute the correlation function of the spike in times, you see that it goes exponentially to zero. And what is also interesting is, or perhaps even more, okay, here I'm summarizing what I was saying before. This is the transient for a G value that is well inside the so-called ordered or synchronized region. This is a linear scale. The transient length grows linearly with the number of oscillators. In this other regime, instead, look just, for instance, at g equal 1.8. This is an exponential scale. And look at this curve. Oh, sorry, no, look at this curve. Then you really see that it seems even possibly faster than exponential, but this is not the key issue. What is important is that it grows exponentially and indicates that we are really before a transient regime. And okay, in this picture, what I'm showing is measuring the coefficient of variation, which means the rescaled value of the variance of some observable, in this case, the interspike interval, to see that if I am in the region, the ordered region, it goes to zero, and it is in a logarithmic scale, so it goes rapidly to zero, meaning that this is clearly a transient. Eventually everything dies out. It stays constant if instead you are below some sort of threshold point that we have not been able to identify in a better way. I should say it's not even obvious whether it is a transition. The best way to look at these two regimes is through these two patterns. The way we produce them is we order all the neurons according to the value of the potential at some given time. Then we look at the next spike in time, and if meanwhile the position of the neuron within in the ordering has changed, then we use a white color. If nothing has changed, meaning that the ordering is the same, that's black. And here we are slightly below the transition point. So we start with a lot of white and black regions almost randomly organized, but eventually you clearly see the tendency to the white region to disappear, and if you wait long enough you will see something only black, meaning that there is an ordering is reached and this is going to stay there forever. If you are above transition, there is no evidence whatsoever of a convergence towards some specific phase. So these two pictures for me are very much reminiscent of percolation transition. There is one point that should be immediately recalled, that this is a pseudo-spatial variable, but all the objects are globally coupled. In fact, I really don't know how to tackle this, the problem, even from a pure numerical point of view, because studying globally coupled system is much, much tougher numerically than just one-dimensional systems. Anyway, that's an interesting evidence of this phenomenon in a completely different context. How much time do I have?
5 minutes.
Okay. Now I want to go to the other model where we have found this phenomenon in a context that is not strictly dissipative. So I cannot state that the Lyapunov exponent is negative. In this case, the Lyapunov exponent is positive. The lack of chaos in a Hamiltonian system means that the Lyapunov exponent is zero. And the model is the so-called hardpoint gas, and that is just a model, a one-dimensional system of particles with different masses that collide elastically, and they change their velocity just in such a way that energy and momentum is conserved. And this was and is still a popular model to investigate heat conductivity in one-dimensional systems, but this is not the point I wish to consider here. No, this I go to this point later. I mean, this model is well known to be non-chaotic. It's not chaotic, and in spite of the fact that it's ergodic, and any perturbation, and eventually the system reaches thermodynamic equilibrium, the way to show that it's not chaotic is, for instance, by looking at how infinitesimal perturbation propagate, and you see that perturbation propagating, they don't grow exponentially, so the system is not chaotic, but there is a maximal velocity of propagation of perturbation that is characterized by the position of this peak. And if you measure the position of the peak at different times, you can determine the velocity of infinitesimal perturbation. And you can compare the velocity of infinitesimal perturbation with the velocity of finite amplitude perturbation. I mean, you can just perturb the position of two particles wherever, these two by some finite amount, and you look at how the two configuration evolve in time. And this is a typical example of how the picture looked like. This is an ensemble average of a finite perturbation at different times. So we start from with a delta-like profile. It spreads. Obviously, the amplitude cannot be larger than some amount. And you do see that there is a linear propagation. You can measure just looking at the crossing times with some specific threshold. And if you do that, you see that the infinitesimal perturbations, so you should in this picture look at these green points, propagate for different values of one parameter that I didn't have time to introduce with some velocity. If you look at finite amplitude perturbation, they propagate with another velocity, which is a clear signature of the fact that, as I was telling you in the very beginning, the two velocities are different from one another. So this is another example of this type of behavior where, let's say, you have this sort of chaos that is characterized by the absence of exponential amplification of infinitesimal perturbation. I just conclude with one comment. What's the reason of this type of behaviors? In the first model that I have shown you, it is clear what one peculiarity of the model is the presence of a discontinuity. Around this discontinuity, if you have two orbits that find themselves exactly to the left or to the right of the discontinuity, in one iterate, even though they are infinitesimally close to each other, their distance is amplified and becomes of order one. And this reason is the reason why for a long time I thought, okay, so the models where discontinuities of this type are present are very artificial and have no correspondence to physical reality. In the last two models, and here I come to the other transparencies that I was skipping earlier. In the last, here, for instance. Here it's shown that there are indeed this type of discontinuities, but they are naturally present in the model and are connected to the fact that there are three body collisions. If you change the initial condition from this one, where this the positions are organized in this way, then you have first the collision of these two particles, then this collision, and then that collision. If you move the particle a little bit to the right, the order of the collision changes. And if the result of the collision, I mean, is don't commute with each other, like this is the case, you can really see with your eyes that the final result, if it's very different, it's even true that the red particle is moving to the right, here is moving to the left. So as a consequence of change in the order and non-commutativity of the propagation operation, you naturally have discontinuities. The same is true in the leaky integrated fire model, where the equivalent of the three-body collision are the simultaneous firing of two neurons. If the order in which two neurons fire changes, and the result is forced to have non-commutative consequences because the two neurons are not equivalent because of their different random connections, you may have different future evolution. So that's the state of the art, and thank you.